Drive, you make KBOO possible.
Hello, I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
As we approach the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John Kennedy, we reflect on the eventful year of 1963.
In our next More Talk radio program on November 18th, our guest will be Byron Williams, an acclaimed columnist for the Huffington Post.
We'll discuss his provocative book, 1963, The Year of Hope and Hostility. And we'll look at the Kennedy administration, the civil rights movement, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and George Wallace.
That's Monday, November 18th at 8 a.m. on More Talk Radio, right here on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. My guest is Rainer Ward, author of the novel Advent and the sequel Epiphany. Rainer Ward was raised in Waco, Texas. He taught English briefly at the University of Texas and at a junior college in New York City. He became a union carpenter in Oregon and Texas. He owned and operated a small remodeling company for 32 years. He retired in 2007 to write his novel Advent. He lives in Portland with his wife, Holly. They have been involved in forest activism, police accountability activism, and the Save Our Reservoirs campaign. And I must say that Rainer has been a staunch supporter of KBOO and sometimes a volunteer here. Among other things, he built our kitchen cabinets in the lobby and has done some of the plumbing here. So, Rainer, thanks for your work, and thanks for being here on Between the Covers.
Thank you, Kathleen. You're too kind.
Rainer, describe your book, Advent, as a novel based on fact. What do you mean by that?
Well, I could have made it, my book, be a memoir, but at first, when I was first writing it, I thought that so many people might be angry at me. But then later on, as the years went by, which it took about 4 years to write with counting editing, which I did about 6 edits on it, I figured most of those people were probably too old to care, you know, if they were still alive. And so, the way I structured it was with timeline was really important. I mean, such a long period of time that I use it as a way to keep track of all the action, and then I emphasized character because I remembered, you know, just word for word what people said during this time, and I don't know how, but that's just what happened.
Now, we're talking about Advent, and we should tell people a little about the main character in the book. Joe Kemp is his name when the book begins. And he, tell people a little bit about that character.
Well, Joe Kemp grew up in the country, basically out in Texas, close to Waco. And he had tremendous freedom, something that I just don't see kids having these days. Everybody was really free. I mean, we could go anywhere, we could do whatever we wanted to, and as long as we didn't hurt anybody, and there was lots of space. So I guess one of my big influences was my grandmother, and she she did things like she was in the Paramahansa Yogananda movement. She went to California for a while to do it, and she was always reading the Nag Hammadi, and she went to the Holy Land, she called it. And she turned me on to things like, she had a quarterly called Tomorrow, and it had things in it about, for instance, Maria Sabina, the curandera in Mexico that Alice Huxley and other people knew, and that she was a magic mushroom witch, so to speak. And so I thought, man, I really would like to go there and do that. And I read about opium and marijuana and all these things. And nobody else that I talked to knew anything about this.
And this was in what years are we talking about here?
Well, from early on, I mean...
In the 40s?
I kind of got interested in these kind of things in the early 50s. And my grandmother had an extensive library. Ouspensky and Gurdjieff hadn't been published then, but Edgar Casey, I read all these books. And my grandmother was also like a, I guess you might call her a faith healer. She would say she was a Jesus healer because, well, actually, what she did succeeded somehow or another. And it's pretty amazing. She had this prayer group, and so she turned me on to a whole lot of ideas and concepts and things that I probably never would have known about for a long, long time.
And being in Waco, Texas, you mentioned not many people knew about those things. How did that affect you and basically the character of Joe Kemp also? How did it affect you to be in this environment and have this knowledge of all these things?
Well, I knew that, you know, I started looking for it, and I would ask people if they knew where you could find weed, and, you know, only weed then, I mean, mescaline and those kind of things. You didn't hear much about those, or you wouldn't think anybody in the general population would know about them. So, but everybody I asked, nobody knew, and so finally, I talked my parents into letting me go to school in Mexico, Mexico City College. So that's where I first scored, and then my little brother came down. He was 15. And I turned him on, and he knew all about it too. He was into it, you know, intellectually and everything. So we went back, you know, home, and all the people that I knew in high school, even my best friends, played football with and everything. I just, you know, I knew that they'd say, "Oh, you're a dope addict," you know, if they found out that I, you know, smoked weed or anything. So, but my brother turned all his friends on, and they were like 15 and later, you know, they were all in high school. So these kids, they kind of became my friends too. And some of them became, you know, smugglers later on and everything. And that's kind of how I got into that.
So you mentioned that you went to school in Mexico, and you also went to school in Texas, and it sounds like you made, from reading your novel, which is you, it sounds like you majored in English and taught English for a while. So when did your urge to write a novel begin?
Well, actually, I always wanted to write. I wrote a novel when I was 8. It was called The Ghost of the Red River Valley. And I never had been to the Red River Valley. And then I wrote another novel called The $8,000 Coin Mystery. And then there's a short story I wrote when I was 15 that I put in the novel. But then, you know, when life got more complicated and everything, and I had family and everything, I kept trying to write. I had a good idea of writing a novel from the Austrian experience, But I just never had time to really do it. And so finally I just thought, when I was 67, I thought, well, if I don't do it now, I'm probably never going to. So I just started writing every day. I wrote, I got up in the morning, and I did the whole thing with green tea, you know, that was it. And so I finally was able to use the ideas that I had for an original novel about Austria, and then expanded it into the whole experience up until like the end of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. The book ends in 69?
Yeah.
And this process of writing this basically autobiographical material, how did you deal with the whole issue of the facts of your life, and did you make any attempt to fictionalize things or fill in gaps with other kinds of material? How did you deal with the fact that this is so autobiographical?
Well, I like I said, I somehow or another I can remember voices and I can remember inflections and so forth, and so the dialogue, say with my parents, if it didn't actually happen, it certainly could have, and I knew that. But most of the stuff actually happened in the book, and there's very, very little that I had to change or anything. Mm-hmm. Basically, it made it a lot easier to write too.
Did you keep journals through those years?
I did have journals starting in about 1969. And I had journal, well, 66, basically. And they didn't really have that much to do with the book, but some of them did have a lot, as a matter of fact. For instance, the part about Gritchie in Austria, I remember I wrote a sort of an essay about Gritchie's mother, who was a doctor who lived through the Nazi and the Soviet, you know, regimes there. And that was exactly what happened, because when I got through talking to her that day, I went home and wrote it down. So every now and then there's something in there that's just, you know, I wrote it the next day about it. So
so you were able to rely on that to make your recollection of it. I'm speaking with local author Rainer Ward about his book Advent and the sequel Epiphany. This is Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. Let's talk a little bit more about the character who is throughout the book, Joe, who later part of the book takes on the name Rainer through a religion that he becomes involved in, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not really a religion.
We'll talk about that
movement. Well, we're talking about Subud, and it's not a religion. It's an exercise that was received, you could say, from an Indonesian man. And basically, what it does is it gives people what a lot of people are looking for in religion, that religion promises but doesn't deliver. It's a method of purification, and it changes you, mm-hmm. changes your character and everything.
And it was one of the many spiritual practices that you investigated, right?
Yeah, I had like a regular smorgasbord of practices. Meditation for a while, that I had to meditate about 2 or 3 hours, starting at 4 a.m. every day, and various other things, Scientology. But I felt, in a way, I was like a journalist, you know, to some of the things that I did. I just kind of was checking it out and everything. And I had a whole thing about shaman. This is way before people always talk about shaman now and everything, because when I was in Austria, the second time, I went to a yoga class where they had speakers come, and there was the guys that were, they had been to Siberia and various places where they were like real shaman, and, you know, they told about it and everything, and so I really got into that, just reading about it and everything. And I saw the thing is, I saw that my grandmother, when she, you know, like that, her prayer group, it was pretty amazing. They cured, I guess I could say that, they cured a woman who had a tumor as big as an orange in her stomach. And how the cure worked out was that she went to have it operated on, and they couldn't find it. And they did several x-rays, and it just wasn't there. I mean, it had been there the week before. And so my grandmother, you know, she attributes all that to Jesus. Well, the shaman also have amazing things that they actually do, and they attribute it to the spirits, our ancestors, and so forth. Everybody, I mean, it's not that a lot of different people can't do, quote, miraculous things or be involved in them, but they all attribute it to something different. And so I kind of thought, well, there must be something in people that it's part of humans, you know, that we have this capacity to go beyond ourselves. And that's why, one of the reasons that I was into psychedelics like magic mushrooms and peyote and so forth, acid, was because I wanted to go beyond, I wanted to transcend myself. And I'd read all the reasons why, you know, like from Gurdjieff and Pak Subud, the Indonesian man of Subud, he had the same explanation as the Sufis, basically, or as Gurdjieff. I mean, the problem, you know, that people are sleeping, that everyday consciousness is kind of like a walking sleep in many respects. These people all, they nailed the problem, but the solutions were different. And like if you have a guru, say, and the guru tells you what you should do, this is a person telling you what to do, but the difference is that, and of course, a person is always limited by their social, psychological, whatever self, but with the exercise and of Subud, it's an internal thing. It's something that happens from within, and you don't have any teachings or any strictures or anything like that, and so that's the difference, I guess.
Do you still practice that?
Yeah, I've been doing that for over 50 years.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about that comes up in the book is the process that Joe experiences that's called the madness of God. Can you talk about that?
Well, this all really began before I went to Mexico. Things started happening to me like people would be talking, and I felt like they were talking about me secretly, kind of a paranoia, I guess, and they were talking about my case, and so I began to think, I began to actually, if I would call it, read people's minds, and it wasn't pleasant at all. And I, along with this, I thought that there's a thing called, it's a sort of an esoteric religious idea that there's a group or that people are on another level, are in in sort of a conspiracy to create enlightenment, and but there's pain involved in it and everything. I began to see all my faults and shortcomings and so forth, and it was all connected with this. Plus, I was taking magic mushrooms with a shaman in Mexico and everything, and I just kind of flipped out. And
and why is that called the madness of God?
Well, it's I might be taking it on a little bit too much with this term. It's something you hear about in India, you know, like from yogis or people that are into certain practices. They just become sort of basket cases, and in fact, I was a basket case in many ways, you know, when I was in Mexico. And fortunately, I had really good friends. I mean, today, like what I hear on KABU, you know, in some of the shows, you can end up, you know, in jail or in prison or institutionalized in various ways if you were going through what I was going through, and you got into the wrong hands. But, you know, I had really good friends, David, the character in Mexico, that helped me out and kept me from really making some bad mistakes before I got safely in a safe place.
Mm-hmm. And did you consider that a passage in the growth of you or the character Joe, that particular experience?
Yeah, the whole thing, again, I also connect it, you know, with Subud. It's because it's purification, and purification is not very pleasant, you know, especially if it happens quickly and on a really deep or profound level, and that's what happened to me.
I know that one of the themes that you have written a bit about in the book is related to Dante and other texts. Can you talk about how that's reflected in your book?
Well, one of my first books that I read all the time was Dante's Inferno, because it was one of my grandmother's books. It was a big leather-bound book, and as a little kid, even like 6 or 7, I would just get it and look through it and everything. And it seemed that it would turn out to be kind of a theme in a way, like I found myself in a dark wood, and there's a Beatrice character, Roshana, in New York and Hawaii, and I found all these parallels and light motifs and so forth, but I found this after I wrote the book. I didn't try to do anything like that. I mean, I've taken literature courses and stuff, so basically I just recognized that this is what I had done, and it kind of blew my mind. I thought, well, I mean, it's a good thing I didn't try to like make symbols and this and that, because I might not have worked so well, I think. And the thing about it is, one reason that I wanted to make it be a novel as a memoir is that the truth, I think, is, if you can really get at it, it's a lot more fantastic than fiction. Is that a cliche or what? I don't know. Maybe it's the other way around.
So, okay. Well, interesting. How do people find your book if they want to read it, to check it out?
Well, that's kind of a sore spot in a way, but it's because it's on Lulu, lulu.com. If you went to lulu.com, you could get these books. Lulu is, you know, it's a self-publishing company, and they also, when they publish a book, they'll make it available on Amazon, too. They have a deal going with Amazon, so you could get it on Amazon, too, as well.
Okay. Again, I'm speaking with Rainer Ward. The title of his book, which is, as he says it, a novel based on fact, is Advent, and there's a sequel that's called Epiphany. Rainer, is there something that we're not getting to that you would like to mention about your work in this, your five years of work writing this, right?
Well, there's a real martial art theme, for instance. Some of the people that I met in, you know, being training in martial arts and so forth were really amazing. One person, the character Larson, it was a really fantastic guy and turned me on to, it was like an apprenticeship or something almost, just with one person. And then my friend Nikos, too, we studied with him, and he suggested that I study with a guy in New York named William Chin, and also a wonderful person. I think he still has, he teaches in New York. He's an amazing guy. And so all along, whatever I did, even though no matter how out of it I was or anything, I always kept trying to, keep in shape and keep practicing and whatnot. And that's kind of a major theme, I guess, in there.
And the martial arts do relate to spiritual practices often.
Yeah, that's true, especially, you know, the further you get into it, the more that's so.
And was that the case for you?
Yeah, it was. It really was. And thank God, I mean, luckily I was a health food fanatic and an exercise fanatic, and I got that partly from my grandmother, too. but that was a great countervailing force to keep me from totally subsiding into a complete drug addict or something.
And now that you've finished these two volumes, are you planning to write more or other things, or what's your future as far as writing goes?
Well, I've already written two other things, and I kind of put them on hold. I got 175 pages or so on two other projects, and I'm going to keep working on those. And actually, I've been doing a lot of art. Oh, my book is illustrated, too. And so I've always been into art, you know, and the New York part I was telling about, how I could have had a job as an artist, but I flaked out on it, you know, and so forth. And
great. So, Rainer, I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking about your work. And let me tell people again that I have been speaking with local author Rainer Ward about his book Advent and the continuation of the book, the second volume, which is Epiphany. Thank you so much, Rainer.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. Appreciate it.
This is Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. If you missed part of this interview or want to hear it again, you can go to kboo.fm/betweenthecovers, and it should be up there in the next hour, if not sooner. Stay tuned for Words and Pictures. The guest is Joe Sacco.
Even though I think I know you, you can hear you say
you're mine. 45 DJs play
45 RPM records
all day.
Tune into KBOO on November 16th from noon to midnight
for a special 45th anniversary celebration.
DJs will play 15-minute sets of 45 RPM records,
while from noon to 8 p.m. we'll have an open house birthday party at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue with refreshments,
birthday cake, station tours, and more.
So join us November 16th
in person at KBOO from noon to 8 p.m. and on air from noon to midnight
to celebrate our 45th year of serving the musical, political, and cultural needs of the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world.
For more information, go to kboo.fm/45RPM2013.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub. Independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
I told her no, baby, you know I don't wanna go.
Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, SW Concert, and we are delighted to welcome back into the studio Joe Sacco, the graphic novelist, cartoonist, globetrotter, and the author of the new, well, it's not so much a book, it's almost an accordion fold piece of art. It's called The Great War, July 1st, 1916, the first day of the Battle of the Somme, an illustrated panorama. Joe Sacco, welcome back to KBOO.
It's good to be here, as always.
I'm looking at this book right now, and it has no hinge. It has a front and a back hardcover. And when you pull it out, it's an accordion fold. And it might be compared to the way that Jack Kerouac wrote On the Road. Supposedly, he wrote it on one continuous roll of paper.
Is that right? That's interesting.
How wide is this book when it's completely laid out?